Steinhoff's board of directors released a 10-page document late Friday that basically condenses the findings made by PwC in its investigation into the international retailers' accounts. The auditing and consultancy firm was requested by Steinhoff in late December 2017 to investigate what had happened at the company following the sudden resignation of former chief executive Marcus Uster, a subsequent decision not to release company financials at the scheduled date, and indications that there had been accounting irregularities, and of course the pummeling of the company's share price thereafter. 16 months later, PwC has produced a 3,000-page document and is still investigating, having indicated that to date, Marcus Uster and other individuals have not availed themselves for interview, and they're still working on making those interviews happen. It's essentially found that senior executives worked together to inflate profits, which resulted in them benefiting from massive bonuses, which Steinhoff now says it's looking to get back. Well, to get his view on this stock and the implications of the report, I'm joined on the line by Michael Traherne. He's portfolio manager at Vestact. Michael, so allegedly a small group of former Steinhoff executives inflated the company's profits and asset values over a period of some 8 years, that's between 2009 and 2017. Does the report go as far as naming names, or assumptions are being made by implication?
Yeah, so there's two reports. There's one that's a 3,000-page report with 4,000 supporting documents, and that was delivered to the management of Steinhoff, and that's not publicly available. And from what I understand in that report, there's names being named. The company has released a 10-page executive summary where they haven't named names, and part of the reason they say is that they want the people implicated to have a chance to respond before they put their name into public. So at the moment, we don't know who they are. But some of the allegations made, you can work out roughly who the people are. Obviously, the central person being Marcus Uster in this case.
Yeah, put two and two together. So the fraud is said to amount to over 100 billion rand. It's said that Steinhoff created a very complicated company structure over time. But is this a good enough reason for its auditors not to have been alert to what was happening in its various jurisdictions? Or does it also then imply that auditors turned a blind eye to what was going on, or deliberately rubber stamped it?
Yeah, so I suppose it's worth pointing out that their auditors were the ones who eventually blew the whistle on this. So I suppose that's one point in their court. The big thing here, though, is that a lot of this was fraud, where they lied to the auditors about what was going on. They produced documents that were fraudulently produced. Auditors can only rely on information given to them. Mm. At the same time, though, potentially there should have been more questions asked, but it seems that part of the tactics used by the company was to leave a lot of the sensitive information till right at the end and then put the auditor under time pressure to get results out before the due date, and because of that, not enough questions were asked. So I have no doubt that case studies will be built around the Steinhoff, and Deloitte will be asking themselves, what could we have done better?
Yes, absolutely. So you do indicate, or you indicated that at the top of our conversation, that names are not really readily available in this 10-page document, but there are some third parties who are implicated in the report. Did you see any names or names of companies?
Yeah, so there's a few names of companies. None of them would be known to people. They all, most of them are listed or registered in tax havens like the BVI. And that's part of the reason why this investigation took so long, was to try to get information out of those tax havens. It's very, very difficult. Hmm. So that's where they're at. And that's part of the problem. These names, these companies were meant to be independent of Steinhoff, and at the end of the day, they were actually subsidiaries of Steinhoff. And as a result, those companies then need to be formed part of the group financials when you bring everything together, and that's not what happened.
Right.
And that's how they managed to smuggle essentially the 6.5 billion euros over that time period. It is worth pointing out, though, that the investigation only went as far as 2009, but that doesn't mean that the fraud only started in 2009. There's enough allegations to point that this probably lasted a lot longer. But PwC's mandate was to get enough information that the 2015, 2016, 2017 and 2018 financials can be now stated, hopefully.
Right. So the Steinhoff board says it's going after the executives who were involved in the jiggery pokery and those who benefited from huge bonuses. How successful will the board be in this regard when these players have had over a year to put their affairs in order, so to speak, even if they suspect, you know, that jail time is a possibility, but the money will have gone?
Yeah, so I do suspect that a lot of the money will be gone. Also, the fraud was for $100 billion, but a lot of this was just paper money that was created. So not all of this is actual money that was stolen from the company. It's just inflated the asset prices in the sense that Steinhoff would sell a brand name that they owned, like Pepcor, for example, to a third party and then buy it back at a later stage and then create circles like that. So they were basically just moving assets around, and that's how a lot of the profits were created. But coming back to recovering money, they're going to have to work hard to do it. And a lot of these things are already in tax havens. And to get money out of tax havens is very, very difficult. But hopefully the company can put people behind bars. That's probably easier to do than recover the money.
Do you think the sole reason why all this very elaborate fraud was taking place was so that people could earn massive bonuses that would be justified by the market?
Yeah, a lot of the time that these things start, and obviously we don't know the reason why these things start, but in most cases, people who commit Ponzi schemes, because that's essentially what this was, is it starts with a small lie, and then you have a bigger lie to cover up your first one, and then you hope within time the profits and the growth will overcome your lie, and you won't have to tell anyone. And then at some point, it just gets out of hand, and you can't control it. So, look, there's no doubt that these executives made huge sums of money doing this, be that bonuses, but also part of the scam was that they were third parties involved in some of these rejigging of the assets, and they got paid massive amounts for moving the money around.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt that they made money out of this.
So what did the share price do today? I see it did go up. How did it close? And who exactly is playing in the share right now, given the fact that, you know, the dynamics of that company have not been great?
Yeah, so share price closed up 7% today to just over R2 a share. As much as it moved 7%, it's still very, very far away from its highs of 90-odd rand. You know, R2 is is not much in comparison. So the market cap at the moment is roughly about 8 billion rand. If you consider that the fraud was worth 100 billion rand, it puts things into perspective.
Yes, that is crazy. And then in terms of its fundamentals, the companies that it looks after, I know Star is a star. You know, it has very good assets in terms of the African assets. But what about the European assets? And even in the United States, they had to take the mattress firm company into bankruptcy.
Yeah, so the African assets seem to be the core of what's still making money and doing well. The report did indicate that all the Pepcor assets, which is now, or Star, which is now called Pepcor, all those assets, there was no fraud detected there, and those companies are still solid. So that's good. It's mostly the European operations where the fraud has occurred. And the problem at the moment is that there's huge amounts of liabilities that the company has, and that's even before you consider that a whole bunch of shareholders are suing the company. So from a going concern perspective, there's a good chance that this company isn't actually worth anything and might be broken up into pieces. So I wouldn't be touching it personally. I think there's still too much speculation, and the odds that this goes to zero are just good as it's staying alive, I think.
Yeah, a two-pronged question now, and it really relates to what you've just discussed about lots of claimants waiting in the line. So I guess the findings will embolden the shareholders to pursue their class action against Steinhoff, but what are their chances of success? That's number one. And number two, I see that Christo Visa, who was executive chairman at one point of Steinhoff, he's laid a claim of some 60 billion rand against the company, but he says in light of the report and in light of the fact that Steinhoff doesn't have the kind of money that he's claiming, he's willing to talk.
Yeah, so I think in Christo Visa's case, the assets that are still functioning, that are still making money, which is the Pepcor assets, or the assets that he injected into Steinhoff a few years before it went bust. He's saying they lied to him about what the company looks like, and he wants his assets back, and they were roughly worth 60 billion when he put them in. Of course, the company can't give him its only asset that's doing well. So he's saying, let's talk and see what will happen. I think in terms of overall claimants, though, they right at the back of the queue. I mean, their claim compared to Christo Visa's 60 billion is very small. And even if these people win in court, I mean, there's no money to give them. So one approach that I've heard a lot of people saying is they're actually going to sue the directors for incompetence. And most directors, to be a director, you actually have to have insurance against a lot of these things. So they're going to actually go after the insurance money and hopefully claim some money back from that. But I think even if you do win, the lawyers handling these cases will probably be the ultimate winner, not really the shareholders.
Yeah. You said you wouldn't touch this thing because there's a lot of uncertainty, and certainly the uncertainty will continue if they're only going to release the financial results dating back as far back as 2015 or 2016, when we know that for sure there was wrongdoing happening as far back as 2009.
Yeah, so the thing is, 2015, 2016, we know that those financials will be correct. So you have 2015, you have 2016, you have 2017, and you have 2018. And effectively what this PwC report will give you is 4 years of correct numbers. So you'll be able to draw some comparison between them and do some forecast if need be. Going back further than that, I don't think the numbers will be all that material. That's well in the past. But it'll be interesting to see exactly what the numbers are. The report does indicate what the level of fraud was for each year going back to 2009. So you can get a general idea of how bad things were.
Do you think people will go to prison for this?
I hope so. I don't know. I mean, I suppose it comes down to our prosecuting authority. And the company does point out that they're not only going to pursue people in South Africa, they're going to pursue them globally. So I do think in certain jurisdictions the evidence seems to be sufficient.
Yes.
I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not an expert, but if PwC could find 4,000 documents to compile their report, there must be sufficient evidence to point fingers at people.
That was Michael Traherne. He's portfolio manager at Vestact.